for our Monday Atlanta United recap with 92.9 The Game soccer analyst Jason Longshore on Dukes and Bell.
We do it every Monday. We talk to our man Jason Longshore. Follow him on the Twitter at Longshoe, guys. And he's great, a great follow for not only soccer info, but all the other things that Jason talks about. He happens to be in studio today, which is very cool because we get a chance to open up and talk about some things that we might not get an opportunity to. So first and foremost, it's good to see you, Jason.
What's up, guys?
Doing well, man. This was an interesting match from the standpoint. In the first half, my observation, you tell me if I'm wrong, the defense was not sharp. And I thought that simply because they got a lot of shots. I think it was 11 in the first half. And I'm thinking, okay, they're getting a lot of opportunities here. We got to tighten up. What changed in your opinion?
I think Atlanta scored. I think it's really that simple. You know, the game was very open because Philadelphia came to play. And I appreciate that they wanted to play an attack-minded match. They wanted to try to win it. They didn't want to take things away from Atlanta. So it's an open game. Atlanta played Wednesday. Philadelphia didn't. I think that led to some of the sloppiness, some bad giveaways.
Some turnovers on the back line.
Yeah, little things like that. They just weren't sharp. You know, I didn't think it was anything like poor performance, poor work rate, just not sharp. And Philadelphia, 11 shots, but only one on target in the first half. So they weren't really testing Brad Kazan.
They had opportunities, but they did gack a few.
Yeah, they had a couple. Doach Cal probably had the two best opportunities of the day, and he didn't put them on goal because Brad only made three saves in a clean sheet.
It's not bad.
No, that's a good day.
That's a nice day in the office, especially coming off the way the Dallas game wound. We'll talk more about that coming up. And then, I mean, we really, no way to sugarcoat it. You basically saw Joseph Martinez going for the ball, hit the goalie for Philly right where everyone in the stadium goes, ooh.
Ooh, that was rough. That was really rough. I thought Atlanta started to get better as the half went on and create more dangerous chances. Even though Philly had 11 shots, I think the three best chances of the first half were Atlanta United's. I think when you look at the quality of chances throughout the match, Atlanta played the better game. Philadelphia had zero response once they went behind.
It is our man Jason Longshore talking Atlanta United with us here in studio. It's Dukes and Bell, and we invite your questions as well at 404-741-0929. If you want to talk to Jace, I mean, as far as relaying a question or two, we'll be happy to ask it for you. The tactical differences, or at least the adjustments made in the second half. Talk a little bit about that, because I heard Tata say it, and he talked about the long passes, right? Mm-hmm. And it really, as you said, loosened things up. How did they work that?
Yeah, this has been something that's been building. You go back to the Orlando match here, and you saw a team start to play more long ball. But it's not long ball. Like, when I say long ball, I think to 1980s England style, where it's just kick it long and hope and see what happens. Right. That's not how Atlanta plays the long ball. Atlanta plays the long ball like the Leandro Gonzalez-Pires pass to Miguel Almiron that led to the penalty. Best pass of the season in MLS. And that's not an award, but it should be. That was an unbelievable ball. Atlanta is more open to playing long right now, and it's focused, direct play. It's something Tata Martino was known for in Argentina. It's called verticalidad. It's all about getting the ball into the other half, playing in the other half, because then if you make a mistake, you have a giveaway, you're 50, 60 yards from your own goal.
Right. And that's something we've talked about with Jason over the course of the years. Jason Longshore joined us, by the way. Footy Mob, big party at Fido for World Cup.
Yep. Fido Footy Updates. That's what we're doing every podcast, every World Cup day. It's been a really cool thing to do this. There'll be about a 10-minute podcast every day to break down the action, and it's been really well received. So thanks, everybody, for listening to that. It's been a lot of fun.
And, of course, Jason, along with Mike Conte, you'll hear the call on Sunday as we take on Seattle right here on 92.9 The Game. So basically, we've kind of, as United fans, had to learn and just get our heads around the fact that teams, especially when they come into Mercedes-Benz, park the bus. They're going to have a lot of guys, just kind of the back line, eight guys. So maybe the counter is the way we're going to find more scores.
Well, it's both ways. That's what's great about going out on the road, because you'll get some of these teams like Philadelphia. We didn't get to see it because they had two red cards in the first half here. But they were going to be more defensive in Atlanta than they were at home. At home, they're going to open up a little bit. It's a little bit more of an even game. And to me, if it's an open game, it suits Atlanta United every single time.
Well, I'll tell you, I have enjoyed, when we got to this point in the World Cup, and I just want to get your take, because we watched these games on Friday, and it was, that Brazil game was bananas, because they jumped out on them, and all of a sudden everybody said, okay, well, Brazil will make a run. They'll come back. Right. And they had chance after chance, Jason, and they were not able to get the goal they needed. And so, you're watching this, and I think I'd asked you before the match, I said, you like Brazil? And you said, yes, here's why. And it played out exactly how you thought it would.
Yeah, Belgium has really come a long way for me. And I thought Brazil, never really hit that top gear in this tournament. They had good moments, but not even good halves, really. It feel like, you know, a 5-10 minute stretch here and there where they'd be flying. They just never dominated matches. Belgium has grown into the tournament.
Really has. And Belgium's coach, I mean, there's a connection with the English Premier League for all the players. You know, Lukaku mm-hmm. and Eden Hazard from Chelsea. It just, there's so much star power, you know. And you go and it's amazing that you ever have a conversation, Carl, where you're talking about the fluidity of England's game, you know, and how they're playing. And then you got France with the young studs. They've got, everyone's comparing, who's it they're comparing to? Pele, the young 18-year-old.
Oh, Mbappe. Yeah,
who's just, Carl's like a track meet when this guy is shooting down the field. There's so much excitement, but Brazil, to your point, never brought the kind of elements that those other teams did.
No, Brazil doesn't have as much of that like they used to. They don't really own that exciting soccer that they used to. Now Belgium can play it. France can play it. Croatia can play it. This Croatian team is incredible, and they've had to grind out some results in the knockout rounds. Two games that go to penalties, they get through it. I think they're a better team than England, but I don't know what they have left in the tank. I thought they were going to be dragged off the field against Russia.
As far as the numbers, I'm curious to see what they are. In the world of soccer, okay, worldwide, global, the teams that are left, France, England, Belgium, where does this rank? I mean, when you talk about the interest level and you say, all right, the casual soccer fan wants to check this out. Obviously, people are aware of France and England and even maybe Belgium. You just mentioned Croatia. But what do you think? I mean, this is not the ideal Final Four, is it?
No, not on paper. And not for the casual. I think for the casual fan, you would want Brazil.
You'd want Germany.
Yeah. You'd want England because of just the shared culture that a lot of soccer fans in the United States are all England fans. Probably Argentina because of Messi.
Yep.
Maybe Portugal because of Ronaldo. You want a star.
And Jason, not to interrupt you, but that's what I'm getting to. We realized on Friday as this thing was playing out, and now you look at it, where are the major stars? Like, they've all been knocked out for the most part.
But if you're a guy who goes to Fado, or if you're a guy who goes to Rira, you know these guys on Belgium from the English Premier League. You know the guys on France from the leagues that they play.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that makes it very interesting for me is you got this connection to the EPL.
Well, yes.
Because these are the star players playing in the biggest league in the world.
But you're a hardcore fan. That's the difference. I think you're paying attention to it a lot more than the average fan who might be an Atlanta United fan and goes, I'm going to give World Cup a chance. I've not watched.
Right.
I know who Messi is. I know who these other guys are. I don't know the superstars on these teams.
But, hey, take the ratings. And a lot of people were trying to take the ratings and spin them in different ways. Fox is doing great on the ratings with this.
They are.
You take the U.S. broadcasts out of the last two World Cups, and the ratings for this tournament are blowing them out of the water. And the knockout rounds have been amazing, even without some of those stars.
Right.
So I'm ecstatic about that. I think the soccer audience in the United States is so much further along than they were 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago. To where they can appreciate Luka Modric, who I think has been the best player in the tournament.
And he plays for Real Madrid, right?
Yeah, he plays for the big club. But, you know, Croatia, it's like, okay, I don't really follow Modric that close. And he's not the big star with Real
Madrid.
He's older,
yeah.
But he's the golden ball winner, in my opinion, the best player of the tournament.
And then, Carl, I mean, the style, I guess my argument is style makes the fight.
Yeah.
So, you don't have the yellow of Brazil. You don't have the big German, the Wehrmacht attack. You know, you've got guys that are so fast and so athletic.
Yeah.
This is the style. And I got to be honest with you. For all that Neymar has done and accomplished, the flopping has gotten comical to the point now where there's videos that have gone viral. Have you seen the videos where there's a bunch of little kids and they're all running and they shout Neymar and everyone falls and hits the ground and rides on the floor for a minute? So, I mean,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's part of the game trying to work the refs, but the French style, the speed element, that's fun to watch, man.
Neymar's in this tough spot. I mean, you go back to the first game of the tournament at Switzerland, he was fouled 10 times.
Ooh.
Switzerland only had 3 yellow cards for the whole match. There has to be more protection for skill players. I'm completely subscribed to this theory, and we were talking about it on the broadcast for the Philadelphia game.
Comes back to Atlanta United.
Barco was hammered a few times at midfield, and Philadelphia, very intelligent. They did it at midfield where you're probably not going to see a yellow. You can take a real whack at him, and Ilsenio and Bedoya both got their shots in on him. No yellow cards. I want to see skill players protected because it makes the game better. Now, Neymar has responded to not getting protected in the worst way, by making a meal out of everything. The one with Mexico drove me crazy because it was a little bit of contact on the ankle when Neymar is trying to hide the ball away as Mexico is trying to take a quick throw.
Right.
And then Neymar rolls around for 5 minutes. He should have had a second yellow there. He should have had a yellow there, which would have suspended him for the next match.
Right. Now, again, the star system applies by FIFA guys in the World Cup. That's why we saw Ronaldo in the
But protect
group
him on the field. If we're going to go star system, okay, fine. Call it tighter, and when people start just whacking Neymar all over the field, show a yellow for it.
Jason Longshore is with us here, guys. As we mentioned, it'll be a great atmosphere. Talk to the listeners who don't know. We mentioned earlier, Saturday or Sunday, we're going to get the World Cup final in the Mercedes-Benz, and then we'll watch our guys take on Seattle.
Yeah, this is going to be wild. So full house Sunday for the Atlanta-Seattle match. You can come in early and watch the World Cup final starting at 11 o'clock on the giant halo board. It'll be on all the TVs all over the venue. I mean, the greatest giant sports bar in the world, Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Right.
That's going to be a pretty sweet place to watch the match. And then you get Atlanta United and Seattle in that atmosphere. Seattle's been struggling. They have not scored as many goals as a team as Joseph Martinez has individually. And it looks like a day that Atlanta United could have a lot of fun on the field.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking forward to it. It's a unique situation because, again, the World Cup comes around once every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this opportunity, and we won't probably have another opportunity like this till the next time it rolls around, but to have a game on the same day as the final of the World Cup makes it a very unique sporting situation.
Yeah, I mean, this game is on Fox, you know, locally. It's on Fox in the United States. Worldwide, this is going to be the only game worldwide after the World Cup final.
Wow.
And Atlanta United is getting picked up by radio stations, TV stations all over the world because it is the premier team right now in the United States.
The Guardian, the English newspaper, ranks us the number one watchable team in MLS.
Yeah, I mean,
how cool is that? We're getting love around the world. Real quick, just we got about 30 seconds left. The Dallas ending, is there any lessons from that can be applied to the playoffs about how you hold your poise a little bit better?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. Miles Robinson, for me, made a mistake. I think he overcommitted on the play that led to the equalizer. He overcommitted. At that point, you have to make a decision. You can't get the ball. You have to foul the guy. And you eat the yellow. If you eat the yellow, if you get a red, you get a red. You can't let that play continue. It's a young player. He's got to learn from it. But the sub was the right sub because Dallas went to four up top. You had to go to five in the back at that point.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this, Mike. It's almost like you're playing prevent, right?
They
come in with five receivers. You need an extra guy.
You got to have six DBs.
Yeah, we made the right move. It was a mistake. Mentally.
Execution was wrong.
They execute. Under-executed.
That's what I was looking for. Yes, the under-execution.
Arthur Blank owns both teams.
Yeah. Hey, Jason, great job as always. Follow him, man, on Twitter and be listening to the podcast. When is the podcast again?
So just released the one previewing the semifinals. Go check it out. It's at 92.9 The Game. It's at the radio.com app. And it's all over your podcast catchers.
There it is, man.